welcome to another edition of the Retro Lovely podcast. Today we're speaking with Carissa Marie, one of our recent special model edition models, and someone, if you followed Retro Lovely, you will no doubt recognize the name and have seen her on many of our covers. And for those who might dig deeper, Carissa also does a lot of hair and makeup for a lot of the features that we have coming out of the New England area. So it is also an interesting thing. I'm going to fully own this. I want everybody listening to this today to know we did this interview just about a week ago, and I had a technical difficulty on my part. It wasn't my equipment. It was me not paying attention to the fact that sometimes batteries aren't as powerful as they might seem to be. And Carissa was gracious enough not to freak out, and we're at it again. So this is almost like a deja vu. So Carissa, good Sunday morning. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. I understand. Well, let's actually start out with some of the typical stuff. How long have you been doing pinup modeling?
It's professionally, like my first professional photo shoot was about 12 years ago.
Okay. And what actually got you into it? I know in your model edition, you're talking about like family, like you had seen some things through family. Was it your grandmother, I believe?
Oh yeah, for sure. My family has always been into cars. My grandfather, my uncle, they're all my family. She was more of like the pinup, you know. She had all the costume jewelry and all the crazy wigs, and her hair was always done. So I would sit at the kitchen table and just watch her put her makeup on and just be beautiful, you know, and then just go stand by my grandfather's car. So yeah, definitely that. I mean, I go to car shows and stuff with my uncle, but I never got the courage to actually do it until like a couple years. Well, I'm saying a couple years ago. It's been about 10 years now.
And, you know, just a quick question that tickles, like when you talked about your grandma, I sense some nostalgia in her process. Were you fascinated by the ritual of her going through and doing?
Oh, absolutely. Because my mom was a tomboy, so she didn't do that stuff. So when I was at her house, it was like, oh my gosh, all the makeup and the hair and the jewelry. I mean, I still have a tin. She actually kept like a little blue cookie tin full of like clip-on earrings and big, you know, costume jewelry. And yeah.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated by how certain things like with the ritual, sort of like attract people, be it bad habits like smoking, be it like a cigar, or the process of people when they're tasting wine or whiskey. There's so much like with that process that people get roped into, as much as, oh, I like to drink whiskey or I like a cigar, right? Like all that, all the trappings. So I think pinup and photography has a lot of that too. You know, there's definitely like a process that in and of itself can become sort of like an addictive thing, something that, you know, people really love to death. And especially with, you know, because we talked about this, of course, last week, but the aspect of, for women especially, when they transform, when they get their hair and makeup done and they do a photo shoot, and people see them in this other light, it can be very validating, and it can really help counter all the negative, you know, the negativity that that our society has when it comes to, you know, certain things like appearance. I hate that stuff. I hate that, you know, people get so wrapped up in that. But that's definitely one of the things about pinup that's, you know, that's the plus. Now, we're talking about you having worked with, you know, photographers and doing hair and makeup. You're actually an esthetician. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
I think I always screw that up. Okay. and how long has that, when did you actually become, you know, trained for that?
So I have been an esthetician for about 16 years now. I think I want to say 15 years. 16 years now. And I've been at my own place now for 10 years. Yep.
So good run.
I was actually working in a school. I was a teacher.
Oh, really?
When I had decided that I was like, what is the opposite that I can do? Like, what is complete opposite of this?
Oh, no, wait. Back up. So you were an actual teacher in a school, not for beauty, but for something else, like an actual...
Yeah, for kids. It was kindergarten. Yeah.
Oh, see, we didn't cover this last time. So what did you teach?
It was pre-K and kindergarten. Yeah.
Okay, so dealing with the young minds. Okay, and how long were you involved in that?
I did that for about 5 years.
Okay, So you went from doing something with kids to actually earning a decent living with what you do now. Because I know teachers.
I was petrified.
Yeah.
I was petrified to leave. I was petrified to start a whole new journey. And I was just like, I have to do this for me. Like, you know, and then going back to like the whole beauty thing, you know, like that was what I really wanted, like deep down, you know.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't, like, you know, everything that you learn as far as, like, being an educator, a teacher, that just doesn't go away. Now, let's say, like, in 6 years you decide, you know, I want to dabble with that again, or maybe, like, substitute teaching or, like, a part-time thing. Do you have to go get, like, recertified for things or, you know, is that an option as well?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go and you'd have to take a few things. Because so many laws and stuff change, you'd have to go back and, you know, get freshened up.
But it's not like starting over from scratch. Yeah.
Right.
That's cool. And that's interesting too, because I think having that like sort of under your belt, that of course, and what you do, it all bears to working with people and helping them and being able to communicate with them to have a desirable outcome, you know, to actually get something constructively done. That's cool. Yeah. That's very cool. And it's, and I hate to say it, because like when you said, what, kindergarten, pre-K, was that right?
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, these days, when you're dealing with adults, it feels like you're dealing with kindergarten and pre-K. You know, so you've got some really good training to help with that kind of stuff. Because I feel it myself all the time. Like I just, oh my God, seriously? How do you function in the world? But that's neither here nor there. Very cool. Very, very cool. So yourself personally, we did touch upon, I guess it was how old are the East Coast Vintage Vixens? That's that group.
It is just now a year.
A year. Okay.
Yep.
That's fresh. Yeah. That's fresh. That's not that old. Yeah. Okay. And tell us about that. How did that begin? Where is it located? How many members do you have? What are your goals? Give us the full Monty.
So we are out of New England, I'm pretty much all over New England. I mean, one of the girls just moved actually back to Massachusetts from Maine. So we're located all over New England. We were a group previously, and then we just decided that we kind of just wanted to go more ourselves. And it's something that we should want to do, not have to do.
Right.
You know, this
right.
is something that you know, is a passion, you know. We are getting ready to celebrate technically our second annual ball, but our first year of a weekender.
That's a big distinction.
We've got that going on right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I know we talked about that because Retro Lily sponsored you guys in a small way. Because obviously so many of your members have been in our issues and have supported us. So it seemed like a natural, the thing of it is from that last ball, You were in a facility, which is where this one's going to be again, that
yes.
I saw some of the photos and I thought, wow, what a great space. You know, it was a very, I don't know if I want to say it looked modern, but it certainly looked well-maintained. I mean, it looked like it definitely, because, yes. And I'm going to contrast this to Carissa back in 2019 and some of her sisters from New England came down to Pottsville, Pennsylvania, where we're based, to the Retro Lovely Ball, the last event that we had. And for reasons of proximity and convenience, we held it in a hotel that has seen better days. Once upon a time, it was a giant department store, and they retrofitted it. And over the years, they haven't really had the sort of resources to keep it as up to date as, you know, someplace that's new. And when I saw the pictures from that place, I was like, wow, this looks like a resort. This looks like, you know, I remember when I went to Nashville Boogie. And I forget the name, was it the Gaylord? It kind of reminded me of that because you had the atrium, you had that little gazebo in the middle. And there's a pool there too, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why we wanted to utilize the pool. So we're adding in a pool party this year. And it's all already, the decor is pretty much already there. You
right.
know, it's
yeah.
got all the plants and that whole vibe. So
yeah,
it's definitely beautiful.
Very cool space. Very cool space. And the date of that is the end of May leading into June. Is that weekend?
Yes.
That's
yep.
Cool.
It's the 31st, and then the 2nd is pretty much checkout day, but the Luscious Ladies are actually going to help us out and they're going to host a farewell breakfast
oh,
that last morning. Yeah.
Killer, killer, killer. And is that, I'm going to imagine the New England Luscious Ladies, any of them trickling up from the New York area?
That is actually the New York Luscious Ladies are actually hosting that. Ah, so okay. I don't know if the other ladies are going to help them out. But yeah, we actually, because I keep checking in with the room list, and we do have a bunch of ladies from Long Island and the New England Luscious Ladies. So yeah.
Yeah, we had a few of those down to the Rachel Lovely Ball. So I, you know, and you mentioned about coming up to it, and it's like I kind of want to, but I also have anxiety of committing to something right now for then. But it's definitely something that's in the back of my mind. I was like, that would be pretty cool because there's a lot of faces that I haven't seen in a while. I mean, after COVID and everything else, but you know, I've been a bit of a shut in down here just working. But it'd be kind of cool. It'd be kind of cool to rub elbows with some of these folks again. And, you know, here's another segue. One of the things that I'm also excited about when we talked about the sponsorship, I had suggested to you something that we did at the Retro Lovely Ball was to do a scrap or an autograph book. Where basically, you know, we did it down here and it was kind of like a thought. And, you know, people thought it was, you know, we heard people talk about it, like, yeah, that's neat. But until the event finally happened and people are there and they're mingling with all these people, many of them dressed up, to, you know, very, very nicely. And, you know, here's all these ladies that have modeled and done photo shoots and they're in our magazines. And there's an actual, you know, an autograph book where you can like literally flip the page and like you're standing in front of the girl that's on that page and get her autograph. So, you know, it was as soon as people saw it and they could touch it. You know, we got a number of them and we ran out. You know, I tried to like anticipate how many people would want extras. And, you know, I missed that by probably like about a dozen. But it was a very, you know, exciting thing. And I know something that, you know, some of your team did, which was great, is they actually did a video paging through the autograph book that we had during that event.
Yeah.
Which, as soon as you see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that you kind of can't explain. You have to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that little video is great. In fact, I want to try and find that and post that some more between now and then. And I still got to dig up my copy because I had one filled with autographs too. And it's in here somewhere because, like, I have stacks of magazines in every corner of the house. So it's like, which is the important stack? Like, I was just looking for the issue of Rich Lovely number one that had Masumi Max on the cover. And that very first issue – I guess it was maybe the following year, or maybe it was 2 years later. Ludella Hahn, you know, who's up in New England. I shot with her a couple of times. We did a lot of things together, and she said she was going, and I said, "Oh man!" And what I did was I sent her a copy of issue one from one of mine, and I said, "Could you please, as you see people," I said, "I know this is a lot of work, especially if you're like in Vegas and you're doing shoots and you're kind of there like on business really." But as you see people that are in this issue, could you ask them to sign it for me? So that very first issue, I know I got Mitzi Valenzuela's autograph. You know, she did the shoot. I know Masumi Max signed it. And then there's probably like, I think I've like 60% of it got signed that year, which is really cool. And I desperately want to find it now since, unfortunately, Masumi, you know, she passed.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I just want to make sure that I treat it with the respect that it deserves. Because she was very gracious, like when I guess I caught her like 2 or 3 years later, and she was just fantastic. Like in this world, in this, you know, in pinup or in anything that deals anything with arts and egos, a lot of times there are some people that are just so full of themselves that it's almost like claustrophobic. Like there's just, you know, and that's not me. I'm just like, okay, well, nice to meet you. See you. And then there's other people that in spite of all of their accomplishments are just so humble and nice that you just want to like tell the world this is a decent person. And she was one of those. She was one of them that was like really surprised me. And as far as I've ever heard from anybody that's interacted with her, that was her. It wasn't just I got lucky or, you know, because that was like mid-career already for her. You know, she just had that. She had that legacy. So it's a real loss for us.
Yeah.
So I got to find that. So cool. So I'm going to, you know, keep thinking about that and try and get up to that thing, because again, there's a lot of people I really should say hello to, and I need a break. You know, I need a break.
We'd love to see you.
Now, you're also doing, so in addition to just the event like you did before, it's expanded to multiple days, but there's also some other interesting components where you're actually doing a car show as well.
Yes, that's at the Saturday morning of the ball. Actually, we're doing a car show.
Nice.
We have a bunch of vendors coming up. We've got the Dirty Walter and the Smelltones are playing during the car show. So I'm just praying for good weather, but mm-hmm. all else is smooth sailing and pretty stoked about it. So
that's awesome. Now, as far as that car component, do you have some of the people that are really, really deep into the car community taking some of the responsibility so you're not juggling all of that too? Do you have
we have the Creeps Car Club. I mean, they've been doing their own show for years. They're a great group of guys. They help us out with a lot of stuff in the community, and they're actually going to be co-hosting it with us.
The way to do it. That's the way to do it. And I got to assume, so that with that connection, have you all had cross pollination with shoots and things? Have you guys done some shoots with some of their vehicles?
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah. I mean, you've probably seen multiple times.
I'd recognize some of them. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
I remember. I don't know who the model was. I've probably seen the car a couple times, but there is a specific Ford Falcon that I've seen shot a few times. And mm-hmm. anytime I see those photos, I point it out to my brother because he has two different Falcons himself. And yeah. I always tease him because he's been working on them for the last 30 years. And they really don't seem like they're improving at all. So I always
Is it the baby blue? If it's the baby blue one, that's actually one of our members.
Oh, really?
It's her car. Yeah. Mama D. Yep.
You know what? It might be. I'll have to dig back and check that out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always have to bust his stones a little bit. Look, these are cars. they're at shows. What are you doing? But
yeah,
for him, like I said earlier about the ritual. For him, it's about the process of tinkering with things, not to have a completed show car that he's gonna put on a trailer and sell one day. He just likes to work on them.
That's my boyfriend. Yeah, really? He's got about 3 project cars right now working on, but we don't have one that we can drive to a show.
You know what? And I bet there's thousands of cases like that all over the place. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. So let's see. I'm trying to think of some of the other things we may have touched upon last time that we haven't gotten to yet. I know. That was one question too. The Vixens are the East Coast vintage Vixens.
Yes.
I think I did ask you about the possible intent, or maybe it's just that you're open to other chapters. Is that something that you're actively pursuing? Or
yes.
Okay.
That's why we kept the logo as Vintage Vixens, and then we are the East Coast Vintage Vixens.
Yep.
So we want to eventually have other chapters out there. Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. It's and groups like that can always be a difficult sort of thing. Now that you had done some teaching with young kids, that's an exciting thing to hear because the politics of working with people, how to frame things and set something up so that it doesn't become a crash and burn situation like you see so often. So, that's very cool. And as far as it goes, you actually were one of the founders. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And was it just you?
I mean, it was a group effort. I mean, we all pretty much were throwing names back and forth, and then we were, fooling around with the logos, and we actually had one of the car guys in the community. He actually drew it up for us, and we had it done digitally. So
excellent. Good. Now, just because I really like for these podcasts to serve as a bit of a template for others. Okay. I kind of want to back up just a little bit and mention at this point that with pinup modeling and with what we do with the special model edition model editions and our new showcase series is we try and provide some opportunities for models to actually make some money because mm-hmm. What it boils down to is if you're the average consumer of pinup, you're seeing the endless ocean of images being posted on social media. There's no shortage of pinup imagery to be seen. And I think that's really kind of fascinating for me because back in 2009, I went to my first Viva Las Vegas. And that same year, I got down to Texas. It was like literally two weekends, a week that was straddled by Viva Las Vegas and then the Lone Star Roundup down in Texas. And, you know, I've always been into pinup. I was like a phenomenally huge fan of Betty Page before she regained her popularity back in the 80s. Because, like, when I was a kid, my father was actually he manufactured concrete lawn ornaments, which is like, I don't know how many people have the distinction to say that their family made concrete lawn ornaments, but mine did. And he painted them. So he used airbrushes to paint them. And I mean, I'm talking, they were deer. There was like the lawn jockeys. They were the European variety. So they're always white guys. We never had any, you know, African-American lawn jockeys, but you know, religious statues, urns, bird baths, you name it. Flamingos, pink flamingos.
I grew up with we had the, you know, the half bath and we actually had St. Joseph in our.
Well, you know, it's actually even more anecdotal. My family was Roman Catholic, and when I was a kid, I went to public school, but they sent me to, what did they call it? I don't know what the initials were, but it was called CCD, which was where, you know, a Catholic family would send their kid to like the local Catholic schools, the school. And either like during the week after your regular, you know, education in your public school, you'd go and you'd sit with like the nuns and you'd get religious training. And when I was like four or five, I'm sitting, you know, in the nearby town and I'm sitting in this group of kids and the nuns, you know, they're talking to everybody and they come to me and they say, "Do you believe in Jesus?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, there's like 30 or 40 in my basement." And they're like, "What?" Like they were confused. And then one of the nuns knew the family and she started to whisper to the rest of them, "They make those ornaments." I'm like, "Yeah, I believe in Peter Pan too, because we have all the pixies." So you know, it was all around us. But the thing that was really kind of like the link for me when I was, you know, a kid and my dad's painting these statues and he's using an airbrush. And he had these books. And they were how to paint with an airbrush. And the actual books weren't how to paint statues with an airbrush. They were really like how to make art with an airbrush, like advertising, like you'd see back in the 20s or 30s or even through the 50s. You know, artists would use airbrushes to do the artwork. And in there was like a ton of examples of pinup art, the likes of Elvgren and Vargas. And, you know, all the big names that we associate with the airbrush art. And that's what started it. And there was even some of them had some airbrush paintings of Betty Page. And what was really kind of like an homage to my dad or like a nod to my dad, right after I started Retro Lovely, I was inundated with contact from models about photography. They wanted to shoot with me. But the reality was they really weren't quite so much interested in shooting with me as they were with shooting with the publisher of that magazine that they desperately wanted to be in. And what I quickly realized was that I had to go into hiding. I had to become somebody else. I had to use an alias. I had to reinvent myself as a photographer because I couldn't take the nonsense that went with them reaching out to me, who was also the publisher. So the you know, some of the airbrushes that my dad used, there was like a real fine one called the Pache, I think it's pronounced. It's like a French word. And then the Vilbis, which they make the big guns, like you'd paint a car with. In fact, some of your car guys probably know instantly the Vilbis, what that is. And so when I took my alias, even though it wasn't so much for the fine work like an Elvgren would use, I decided on the name Devil Bliss, like a slight variation on that name that I used to see on the air guns down in his shop right next to those books. So that became kind of like how that came to be. And it's been a continuing nod, you know, to my dad. So that's there you go. So with where did I start? Yeah. So back in 2009, when I get to these events and I start to see, like, you know, all these people like dressed up and everything else, I'm like, hey, there's a community out here that I really didn't know existed that's into this too. And then I start to like scour like some of the there was a modeling website called Model Mayhem back then. I guess it still exists, but it's been eclipsed by everything else. But I started to like find different photographers on there that were doing that kind of work and start to talk to them about starting a publication. And, you know, it was really like an unknown and it was really speculative. And back then I was like just beside myself that there was no money to be made for anybody really in this thing. And part of the original goal was to create a vehicle that people could access to do things with. Like, my thought was treat it sort of like a co-op. People, you know, contribute their work. We all push the ball forward with promoting it. Maybe we all kick in with some money to make it happen. And then we have this resource where we could have these copies of this thing cheap. And everybody was cool with just about everything except putting money in. So that was on me. And I took that role and, you know, we got it started. And crazy thing was, even back then, it's amazing how tides change. But back then, there were plenty of artists who were literally outraged that I should suggest that we put this together and that we couldn't pay anybody up front. That it was going to be a situation where we tried to build something that we could all benefit from, but there wasn't anything up front. And people were like really just, you know, I had nasty emails. And the thing like I find astonishing is that back then, anybody that was in an issue that was released, they got free copies and they got them mailed to them and the postage was paid. The models, the photographers, I think for a couple of the first issues, even the makeup artists got free copies. And then people could get them at wholesale, which when you're printing 5,000 at a time, you can get them for like $2-3, right? So there were people that were going to events that were taking cartons of these things and selling them for $10-15 and making money. And then, you know, a couple of years pass and all of a sudden social media kicks in and smartphones dramatically improve in quality that there's an endless stream of this content going online. And the only people that really benefit from it is like Meta or YouTube or any of those big companies that allow you to publish it for free, but then they make the money on the advertising that they sneak in there or selling subscriptions to Candy Crush or whatever it may be. And it got devalued even further. So right now, when people get online and they see all this work, it is largely paid for by the models. I would wager to say when it comes to pinup and even some of the other categories of modeling, 90% of it is you know, the bill is paid by the models, as far as they pay for the wardrobe, they hire the stylists, they hire the photographers, and they do it because they love it. And lots of other people just, you know, they consume it freely. They watch some ads. Mm-hmm. So for us, one of the recent things, I guess it started about like 3 years ago, I kind of wanted to get back to those days where we were doing more than just publishing people's work and you know, a couple dozen people see it in the actual print copies, and started the special model editions and most recently the showcase series. And the thing that anybody listening to this should really pay attention to is that when we produce them for the subjects, we either give them the files so they can upload them. And as far as like the resale of that art, they are completely in control of what they sell it for. They get the money. If at the end of the year, hopefully they make enough money that the printer has to send them a 1098 because they have to report on their taxes. It's literally a situation where it's the one thing with this where the people creating that art, the models, can get some benefit. So Chris has been a big supporter of ours, and not just ours, but other artists, be it the photographers that she works with or the other models that she works with, either doing their hair and makeup or supporting them in a number of different ways. And the special edition was us recognizing all of that. And hopefully You know, she can do some things where she has these available if she goes to a car show, if it's at the Vixen's summer social, whatever the case may be, wherever there's an opportunity for her to sell some of these things and make some of that money, that's what we want. And we want you to support it. So when we actually post this podcast, we will include links on how to find her and how to get some of these. You also have your own calendars available, correct? And I think you have some for the Vixens as well. So it's not like it's just like a one and done thing. You can get a couple different, you can be fully outfitted with products. And the Vixens even have tons of great swag. I've seen t-shirts and sweatshirts and jackets and all kinds of different things. So from a marketing standpoint, you've really got an arsenal of available items for people to support you guys, which is fantastic. And this is what I want more and more people to try and do. So kudos for that. Now, in that vein, is there anything else you guys have planned to further that forward? Are there any kind of like interesting things, I mean, that you could talk about? Are there any interesting things coming up that are in this same vein?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we definitely want to do more calendars. We want to have more things available. And like we talked about before, like doing it in person, kind of having like meet and greets. And because, you know, people like that instant gratification. You know, you can order a magazine. You know, it's great for the support and stuff, but to see the person and in person and get it from them and get an autograph and, you know.
I'll tell you what, and this is something that I wish more people would do. And how do I put it? This is something that I've seen. A lot of those models that have those like profiles on those fan pages where maybe they sell like, you know, their underwear or naughty photos. You don't have to do that. There's a thing. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I know there was a period where it really exploded with the youth culture, maybe because it's a novelty because they never held a photo in their hands. But Fuji and actually even Polaroid is back. They're making instant cameras again, which are not
Actually had one at the ball last year. Had one at the ball last year.
So those Instax, like the Fujis, are great because they got that little area on the bottom. You can sign them. And for a lot of people, not only is it something personalized, it's a one-of-a-kind item. Okay, that photo is it. And, you know, if you set up a time to have like a meet and greet, you take the photo with them. You take the photo with them, you make that print, and you send it off with them. So fantastic. And that's, I really can't stress that enough to models that the things that are unique and one of a kind are huge. And I'll actually go you one further since you're in business as well. I have recommended ad nauseum the book called Influence, Dr. Robert something Italian. It came out in the 90s and they recently updated it to get in some of the modern social things. But there are so many things in there that are just marketing gold. And I remember specifically one thing that they did a study. They took some college kids. And was it college kids? Because they had a lot of them were done in colleges. But the one study was they brought a bunch of people into a room. And they sat them at a table. And they had a jar with like two or three cookies in it. And they pulled out a cookie, gave it to the person, said, "Would you taste test this and let us know what you think?" And they had like a list of different qualifiers as far as what, you know, what they thought about it. And they had another group where they had the jar, but it was loaded. It had like a couple dozen cookies in the jar. So in the group where there was all the cookies in the world, they said, "You can have as many as you want and, you know, do the survey. Tell us what you think." The other group where there's only like three cookies, they said, "You can only have one. We only have so many. You can only have one." And what happens is when they you know, went through and they looked at all the surveys that everybody completed, the group that was restricted, the group that was told this is a limited supply, they rated the quality of the product higher than the ones that could have as many as they wanted. And it was basically like a lesson in what they call the principle of how scarcity affects how you value something. You know, you ever hear that statement when it comes to relationships, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder?
Yeah.
Apparently, fewer cookies in the jar makes them taste better, too. So, you know, when it comes to, like, anything that can be personalized or one of a kind, it's a monopoly. You know, there are no more. That's the one. That's the one sign. And if it's personalized to the person that was standing there taking the photo with you, super powerful stuff. But That book is, I've listened to it like, because I got it on Audible. I've listened to it like 3 or 4 times now. And every time, you know, certain things are reaffirmed. And then, you know, there's new things that I pick up on that I kind of like didn't catch right away. So check it out. Pass it around. Really good stuff in there. Can't recommend it enough. But, you know, you guys are already doing lots of great stuff. And I know with a successful salon, you know, you've got a lot of you're probably doing a lot of these things already and didn't know that people in colleges studied it, and actually try to fine tune it to make it presentable to others to say, you should do this too.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's definitely the case. Excellent. Excellent. Is there anything else you would like to add today? I think we're almost at about 40 minutes. So that's about what we did last time, I believe.
Well, we had talked about last time. I mean, segue to that is when they see you in person, it's completely different.
Oh yeah.
You know, when they get to meet you, and it's almost inspiring to, you know, new models who are like, you know, I can't do this. I can't, you know, you can absolutely glamour up and be fabulous and almost have like this, I guess, alter ego, right? Like,
exactly. And
you can be,
you know what,
this
that's,
person.
That's actually kind of like a really cool thing too, because if they take on that persona, that alter ego, it's not like they're risking their own personal space by putting themselves out there. It's this aspect of them, which is very cool. That's why like certain actors and things are like completely different than they are in their private life, because they're just, you know, they're hiding behind the character that they're portraying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it goes back to being addicted, you know, like you see yourself, you know, in these photos or in this magazine and you're like, oh my gosh, that's me, you know, like that. And it makes you just feel absolutely amazing. So it is nice, you know, meet these people in person and hear the women say like, you know, I admire you. So it's a great feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've often said, like, I remember in my studio that, like you said about being addictive, I used to think we should have a sign up like in a casino, like, you know, do you have a gambling problem? Right? Do you have a pinup problem? But I actually,
like, are you paying your bills?
Yeah. I actually made the leap to say it is such a uplifting experience and an emotionally powerful thing that I could argue that insurance companies should consider it a mental health expense, right? Like putting your claim for your photo shoot, right? Instead of going to a psychiatrist, it's probably cheaper. You know, I mean, as expensive as it is, it's probably cheaper than a psychiatrist. So that's always been super rewarding. The fact that there is this vehicle for people to actually express themselves and feel good about themselves and realize they don't have to be cookie cutter, you know?
Right.
And I even had a couple times where, like, for certain models, I would say to them, you know, clients of mine, I'd say, you know, I know it's brutal and society sucks when it comes to this. And I said, don't think for a second that some of us guys don't experience it as well. And I said, while not quite like you experience it, for instance, for me is I've always been into music, okay? I write songs, I play instruments, I make music, I record. And I've been in bands and I've been on stage, but I have terrible stage fright, so it's just not my bag. But I still create music and put it out there. And I said, the thing of it is, like, these days, it's always been this way, people like their performance artists to also be attractive, right? They like the good-looking guy or gal singing versus a guy like, what's an extreme? Well, I mean, Marilyn Manson broke the mold because he just decided to be grotesque, period, right? Mm-hmm. Made it work for him. But a great example is, do you remember the band or the group Milli Vanilli back in the 90s?
Yeah. Yes.
So their story, of course, they were found out to be lip syncing on stage, which is common practice today, which is like an amazing thing to consider. But they were lip syncing and it was like they were canceled. Like people just like revolted against them. And the actual root story was that there was these two guys, these songwriters, that created all that music. And they recorded it, and they recorded it really well. And they worked to create recordings that they could take to a record label and say, listen to this material. You know, would you release it? And I don't know how many dozens of times, every time they would go into a label, and the label would see the publicity photos of these two guys, they'd say, we love the music, but you don't have the look. Okay, people aren't going to buy this because you don't look right. And ultimately, somebody said to them, why, you know, you've done this great work. Why don't we just present it as being produced by these two cute Jamaican dudes or whatever, wherever they came from? And they finally gave in. And sure enough, they were right. The music was good enough that I think some of it won a Grammy. Wasn't there a Grammy that they'd won? But
yeah,
huge, yep, huge selling albums that they put out. And it was the same songwriters. It was the same musicians. It was the same vocalists. But they put a face on it that the public could consume, that they could get behind. It's that 1-2 punch. And I said to my clients, I said, that's something that I've been sort of like, I don't want to say victimized by, because I quite honestly don't care so much. Like I never had the need to become like some star or something. I mean, for me, music was as much a therapeutic release as anything. So that stuff didn't matter. And, but I know lots of musicians that are fantastic, you know, musicians and songwriters that they will never really get their due time to let people check out their material because they don't have that look. So, you know, it crosses genders and it crosses a lot of different things in the world. But with pinup, it's great that it counters a lot of the other stuff that's kind of like shoved down our throats. So I know you see it all the time. So we're just commiserating on how cool this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, what else did we talk about? Or that I might've missed this time.
It does get really expensive. The costumes. You see, I know we actually just did a photo shoot yesterday and we were going over like all of the different themes and all the girls were like, well, I got to do this one, you know? And it's also like expressing your art, you know, like you get excited to say like, look what I put together, you know?
Mm-hmm. I actually, I've been noticing in the past few years with regards to like retro leveling and the themes that we do, it kind of feels like it moves the needle. Like I see, cause I'll back into like, you know, if people will tag us, cause I really don't have the time to like look at every damn tag that pops up on Instagram or Facebook. It's just impossible. But every once in a while you do see them and I'm really kind of like taken with how many different, you know, photographers and studios and artists watch our special themes and actually use it as a, you know, motivation, like as a catalyst to do something or to offer a session. For a while, you know, there are certain studios, like they would go through our list and pick out like a dozen different things that they wanted to tackle. And then you see them promoting it and rallying it. Yep. And, it's been really like a really amazing experience because I think it was just maybe 3 years ago, one of the studios that I work with actually said, because when we relaunched, it was just the issues. It was just, you know, the magazine and we did like Taboo and that was it. And they said, would you ever think about doing like a special theme? And I said, I don't know. You know, do you think it would work? What's the upside? And we tried it. We did it with like, I think Halloween, which has become a monster, and Christmas. And then, of course, you know, we just add. And like now there's even like series of things like the 20th Century Retrospective or the Colors or one thing that I just decided to do, because we've had a few, like we did it with Elvgren. We did it last year with, you know, the tribute to the Barbie movie. So Barbie. There've been a number of different things that have been tributes. Betty Page, of course, we do that on her birthday each year. And so I basically decided like, you know what, that's something that's progressing to the point that I think tributes should be like its own little empire under the sun. So if it's Betty Page, if it's the Barbie movie, was another Elvgren, of course. And I think I already have on the calendar for later in the year, tribute to Olivia. So the airbrush artist, Olivia DeBernardis, I always pronounce her name wrong. You know, she did a lot of the early stuff in Playboy back in the day, and she's had several books out. And I think she had Misumi as a subject at one point, and of course Betty Page. But you know, a tribute to her style of airbrush art as photos. And then we just announced one like 2 days ago for Quentin Tarantino, and a lot of good feedback on that, because he's had so many different movies that have strong female characters that they're iconic at this point, and there's plenty to choose from. So people can, you know, it's kind of like a cosplay too. So they can, you know, decide which ones they want to do and you know, do their interpretation of it or do it as close as they can to the film. But we have some other ones too, like there's going to be a tribute to John Waters and all his films.
We were just talking about that yesterday. Like, a majority of our group has already planned to do that. Outfits are already rolling, and that one's an exciting one.
There's, you know what I mean? It's fun, and it's a dumb thing. You could do that any day of the year, but having a mark on the wall, having a date that a collective group of people are going to all do it at the same time, and we're going to have a collection of it, it's become a thing. And it's kind of staggering as far as, like, there's 105 special editions on the calendar. 105. That's crazy. Yeah. Crazy talk.
I will mention one, and then one of the other girls are like, wait, what do you mean? And, like, they completely missed it. I mean, right. I don't know how many times they've looked at the list and still didn't see it, you know? So, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it's painful, because I know with Meta, when you post a lot, they hate that. They hate that. Mm-hmm. They punish you. But what I find is, if I don't post a lot, people miss things. So usually if somebody's on the Retro Lovely Instagram page, you can kind of tell what time of the year it is by what special editions we're promoting. Like, if you get on there now, you'll see heavy repeat posts for the things that are coming up soon, like the ones that are going to be due to be done soon. When I get about a month out, month and a half out, I start peppering the ones coming 45 days from now. So, like, I think I just threw one out for the Devil or Angel, and we started one for the Deuces Wild. So there's going to be some new ones coming online, because we're getting to that point where they're going to be like about 45 days in the future. They're going to start to filter in, and then they progressively get heavier as we get closer to that date. I find that I have to repeat. Otherwise, what used to blow me away, we just like promote a special edition for like 6 months, and then you release it, and then you see all these comments. Oh, I wish I knew. I have content that would have been perfect for this. I didn't know, because they missed that one post that you made.
Yep. And it is so tricky. And that's the other thing. I mean, you want to encourage people to comment and like these things. Mm. You know, I mean, you see it, you like it, you just scroll by it. But it does make a difference. Oh, you know, I know I have been, like, I guess shadow banned before sharing too much. Like, I would share a lot of the East Coast Vintage Vixen stuff. And, you know, they encourage you, you know, you have to get this many likes, and you have to do this. And, not have to, but they encourage you to do it. Yeah. But then when you start sharing and stuff, it's too much, you know?
Yeah.
But,
Well, the thing that you just said is huge. Like, I have definitely found anytime I make a post that asks a question and people start to comment, it just opens the floodgate. Like, it seems like it's the key.
It's being seen more.
Yeah. That tells them, hey, this is something people are interested in. So you don't want to beat that to death. Like, I think I just sent out a newsletter the other day with a clickbaity kind of subject line of, you'll never believe what happened next. Because you see that constantly on, like, YouTube, right? Like, those cheesy phrases that's like a car crash that you have to look. And the sad thing is, it works. So it's a really delicate thing, because, again, you post too much and they get mad. Like, I marvel at it all. It's a shame that it has to be that way, but it is what it is.
Because I remember one of the questions that you had asked was about the different areas. So we would definitely be interested in doing the New England edition.
Oh, that's a no-brainer. I'm really surprised. There are a lot of gals out in the Rocky Mountains that are excited about this. Right now, they've got enough submissions in that they're probably going to be the first one to pop. Like, it's literally these gals up in the mountains up there are like really behind this thing.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I'm sure. So, you know, New England is a given. The other one that's like surprising for me is there's a couple states that obviously have huge pinup cultures, Florida, California, of course, Texas. But the other really surprising one for me is Ohio, right? Like, I don't know what's going on out there, but there are like there's probably three photo studios for every one model that's out there, and they're all doing stuff. Like, the amount of Ohio content that I see is just really shocking. So that was like the one that I never would have like guessed had I not lived through a couple of years now of seeing so much work coming out from out of that region.
Yeah. So I actually have I actually need to get on it, but one of my goals for my birthday in May this year, I wanted to go down there and shoot with Laura Dark. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So speaking of Ohio, yeah.
Yeah. She's got a great studio over there. Nice big, lots of wardrobe and props, and she's been really cool to work with, and she's been really cool to work with too, because she had been, I forget the name of the magazine, but she had some publishing experience herself at one point with like a gothic style publication. So, you know, she's been through it herself. So she has a lot of like insights into what it's like on my side of the computer. So yeah, she's been good to work with. It's, you just mentioned your birthday's in May. What's your birthday? I should know it from your calendar, because I think you had it on there.
May 13th.
13th, okay. Yep. Yeah, my first girlfriend in high school was born on May 8th. I still remember that. So that puts you squarely into Taurus area. Is that correct?
Yep.
Are you stubborn like Tauruses can be?
Well, I am full Taurus.
Well, you know what? Sometimes when I talk zodiacs with people, they'll say, well, what sign are you? And I'll say, well, I'm an Aries. And a lot of times,
my son's an Aries.
a lot of times they hesitate, right? And I'll say, well, here's the thing. I said, I'm like, I almost could have been a Pisces. I'm like early. Mm-hmm. I'm an early Aries. I'm like late March is when my birthday is. And I said, so I'm not an asshole like many of them can be. I'm not like an arrogant, thick-headed, I know everything, I should lead Aries. I'm kind of like somebody that has some confidence, but is peppered with being reasonable with other people. And then they'll laugh because they've experienced those Aries that are just like a little bit much. So when
yeah, my son is April 8th. My son and my brother actually had the same birthday, April 8th. But my mom is March 28th. My dad's March 25th.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You're surrounded. You could do a complete study on all the variations. That's something.
Yeah.
My ex-wife was April 10th, so she was a bit more headstrong than I was, which, you know, it worked out just fine, other than some of the other problems that we had. But it was an interesting dynamic because we really kind of like understood each other pretty well. So wow, you've got lots of them. Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, how about that?
I feel like they're more stubborn than us. I mean, we're known for being stubborn, but I think Aries definitely tops us.
Well, that's where that arrogance thing comes in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one that I have, people are like, what the hell has this has to do with pinup? But these conversations are just chats. But one of the other zodiac signs that I got really familiar with was my one brother and my father was, they were Cancer. And I dated a gal in DC that was a Cancer, and there were traits about them that I can identify from like a mile away. Like I even had a good friend of mine was talking the other day about his wife and some of his tribulations with her. Right. And he was describing some of the things that she does that makes him crazy. And I said to him, I'm like, gosh, she feels like my brother. I'm like, when was she born? Is she a Cancer? And he's like, oh my God, she is. I'm like, yeah, that's a Cancer. he was amazed that I said to him, after an entire lifetime with my dad and my brother, you just know it. And like, I've often wondered, right, if a boatload of like children was shipwrecked on a deserted island and they got to grow up, and then you got to like go and like, you know, talk to them. With them never having been exposed to horoscopes and all that stuff, would they actually still have those traits? Or is it because when we learn about this stuff and we're told what traits these different signs have, do we naturally become them? You know, is it a suggestion that we assume? Like, I'd be fascinated to like, you know, get some Chinese people who only ever like, you know, knew about the Chinese zodiac. And see if like if somebody born on March 10th in China was also an arrogant asshole, right? Like just to see, does it follow them? Yeah. So okay, enough about horoscopes and zodiac and everything else. And All right. What else? I'm trying to think. I can't think of a lot else that we talked about before, because we actually even touched upon some new things this time around, which is cool. Anything you would like to add?
I mean, I don't think, not at the top of my head, no. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to go on throughout the day and think, oh, you know, I wish I had said that, but I can't think right now, no.
Well, we could do a follow-up thing later. Maybe the social comes and goes, and maybe I'm there, and maybe, like, afterwards we could do, like, a recap and reconnect and talk about some of the things that we experienced.
Yeah, I mean, and we love to hear feedback, too, you know? I mean, Abby's constantly putting out things on our social media asking, like, what people would like to see and what people would like to add and what was their favorite part. And
that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, your audience will guide you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool, very cool. I think I'm talking myself into it. Cool.
It's definitely a good time.
Awesome. All right, let's conclude. And I want to thank you again for taking yet another hour of your time after my mistake that I caused.
No.
I'm not going to blame my equipment. It was me assuming that they were right about the battery life. This time we are connected and it's fine. So it didn't shut off. So Carissa, I thank you extremely for your time and your support, and we appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Be good. Talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.